hope you enjoy listening to this weekly podcast from Lifeline Church. You can find out more and discover our other podcasts by searching for Lifeline Church, visiting lifelinechurch.co.uk, or by taking a look at our YouTube channel, Lifeline Church Dagenham.
Okay, so we're going to do a bit of a duo here. Prince has incredible stories, but he's not a natural storyteller.
No.
So we're going to... My job is to try and elicit out of him some of his stories. But there's so many different ones we could go into. I don't quite know which one we'll end up going into. So if it's a surprise for you, it's a surprise for us. Quite what we'll do today. So... have we introduced Prince that he's here? Have we done that? Did we say hello to Mary as well?
No.
Oh, Mary, just stand up and do a kind of a Queen's wave to everyone. You want to say something about your best wife?
Yes, she's special to me. Good morning, everyone. We're pleased to be here again. We feel at home anytime we come back. Thank you for having us.
It's getting to a point now that we almost can't introduce you as guests. You just feel so familiar to us. Okay, so Prince has quite a dramatic life. Plenty of exciting things. And so trying to get some of the stories out of him has been... my life's work, really. And when he was here in January, both he and Mary did a fireside chat, and I think we entitled it something like Tested by Fire. And we looked at a number of occasions, because I'd actually taken the time to sit with Prince, and I said, how many times has an event or a group of people sought to undermine what God has called you to be, or what God's called the work in Sierra Leone to be? And we counted up about 12 different times there was a serious attack on the work. And that's now up to 13, possibly 14 since January. So we can't keep track of them all. But as Prince was sharing, he often uses this phrase, when God says yes, nobody can say no. And so what I wanted to do this morning was trying to unpack a little bit about, what do you mean by that? Where did that phrase come from? How have you seen that that's God's promise? And how have you seen that that's actually worked out in your life? And to do that, we'd try and delve into some of these stories. So you might not be able to see much of it, but more as an illustration. Here are some of the things that we recorded could have undermined the work. Most of those Prince has been firsthand involved in. So Prince, tell us a little bit about, what does this phrase mean to you? When God says yes, nobody can say no.
Over the years, it became apparent to me that my destiny is anchored in God. Even when I never knew that He was with me while I was struggling in life, while I was living in different stages in my life, I never knew that He'd already had a plan for me. Of late, it became apparent to me that, yes, it was God who was with me. Otherwise, I would have not been the person I am today.
So there was a process of really learning who He is. And you talked to me about the idea of realizing He's the Alpha and Omega.
Sure. Even when I never knew like the actual beginning of my own life, others will have to tell maybe my grandparents, but God knew all those background of my life and even the destination of my life. Of late, it's becoming real to me that yes, all what I've been going through, it's just like step by step, God is taking me to that destination that He has for me. So He is the Alpha and Omega. He knows my part, my beginning, and He knows the end day of my journey.
So if you get this sense of the eternity of Jesus, of God going across a timeline, Prince doesn't know his beginning, he doesn't know where it's going tomorrow, but that falls within the context of a God that knows everything, that has been there from the beginning and the end. And so you talk about that idea of anchoring yourself into a reality of who he is. Can you say anything more about that?
So yes, any time in my life when I'm faced with kind of issues or challenges or attack, I've seen God intervene. So I've reached to a point where I've had that confidence that the best place to be is in God, to anchor myself in God. It's not just about, yes, we can do things in the physical, but God has the better answer to whatsoever the challenges might be. He has the better answer. So I find pleasure in anchoring myself in God. So sometimes when there are attacks, many will say, let's go this way. I would say, what God is saying in this situation, or let's attack back. In that sense, what God is saying is the best thing to do at the moment.
So just, most people would have heard your story, particularly during the Civil War and how you were captured and forced to fight by the rebels. Mm-hmm. Just talk a little bit about how, when you look back, you saw God's hand on you.
So one of the things that we reflect on, there are so many things. One of the things I reflect on, I remember when I escaped from the rebels, the jungle I came, actually, one of my cousin told me, you know, we used to go to church, but for a very long time, Prince, now the kind of way I'm seeing you, you're not going. Talked to me about Jesus Christ, again, just reminded me, but I wasn't that much anchored again for that period of time I've been in jungle. But when I went to the village, I realized they've already done my funeral. They got the news that I've passed away, died. They've done the celebration. They've done my funeral. And it was like, oh, a ghost has come. When they got the news that Prince has come, they called lots of elderly people and they were crying, trying to prove if I was really a human being, they would come and touch me. And I'm like, yes, I'm not a ghost. But later I realized that, okay, this was actually what was going on. These people have already done my funeral. They've done with me. There's nobody like Prince. But God actually has a bigger dream behind the scene. And funnily enough, by then the rebels and the Camajor, I had some cousins who were Camajors.
Just explain Camajors.
These Camajors were local trained community fighters who were fighting against rebels. So remember, we are like relatives. They were like, oh, we can't allow Prince to enter into our towns because he's been once rebel. Even though they've celebrated, they've already done my funeral, now they're saying Prince is coming back home. Like, no, we are not going to allow him to enter here because he's been a rebel. They never believed in me at that point. But for me, it was painful, honestly. It was really, really painful. There was nowhere to go and like complain and get solace. The only place was God. And I never had that kind of stronger relationship with God at the time, but he was able to give me the courage. When there, a lot of people cried, and I left the village and came back, continued my schooling. So when reflecting back, all those things that happened to me, and like, oh God, what were you really teaching me throughout this process? Is it resilience? Is it kind of showing me actually your love, your mercy? And I started seeing the reality of God, even when I never knew that he was with me those days. I've started reflecting back, yeah, he was guiding me throughout those tough times.
So you were 15 when you were captured?
Yes.
And you were with the
16,
rebels
yeah.
for 2 years?
2 years.
About 2 years. And you were saying about sometimes they would recruit these boys or teenagers and teach you how to fire a gun, send you into a battle.
Yeah.
And there were times where you you didn't feel that the order that you were given was the right thing to do. But yet, when you look back on it, you recognize that was probably God's direction. So they'd be telling you to run at a gun, and you'd know, no, now's not the time to run at a gun. And even though they were threatening you.
Yeah. Well, especially on the battlefront, most times the rebels will use the younger ones, children, they call them the new recruited boys, SBU, small boys units. They will use them as human shield. They will train you within a short period of time how to use a gun. You have to be very smart, otherwise the gun will be in your hand. You can't just be disarmed by your enemy. So sometimes we'll go to the war front and they will say, advance. They'll be shouting, I mean, the trained soldiers, rebels, will be saying, advance, advance. In that setup, you don't just have to advance like that because your enemies are there looking out for. If they see you, they will shoot at you. So for me, at sometimes they'll be shouting, advance, even coming, kicking at the boat, but you just have to lie down and wait for the right timing. I would not say I was smart, no, but God guided me also through that. There were some guys who could not actually, the moment they shout advance, they would just stand up and start without knowing the environment, where tactically the enemy is located. And a lot of young people lost their lives during those times. But sometimes I'll be lying, they'll be kicking me. So just comfortable lying. Just, they'll come and kick, move on, guys. But the long and short of it, God took me through all these difficult times.
So some of what I'm hearing Prince saying is talking about some of this stuff is not appreciated in the time. It's sometimes looked back and seen. And when you jump back and see all of these different things that Prince has experienced, while we were singing some of those songs earlier, Neil said, what are the battles that you're facing? So these are battles. You guys are facing battles. Not necessarily the same as this, but there's battles. And being able to declare hallelujah, God above it all. How do we get to that stage? Well, Prince is talking about, well, there was a sense, but became clearer later on that God was working with him all of that time. But as you're listening to Prince, I want you thinking, what is the battle that God's wanting to show me that he's saying yes in, even if the battle would lead me to think no's going to win? Right, so just talk us a little bit about how God became real to you. So you've said that this is not just a phrase that you've read in a book or that you've been taught, but it's something that you've experienced and know to be true. So how did God show himself to be true?
So I think it's about the time I became aware of God being real to me, because even when I never knew he was real, I mean, he was with me. But around 2009 to 2010, even when I was working within Lifeline, I never knew that we had people within who are actually seeing me as a threat, working against me. I never knew at the time. But my focus was what God has given me within Lifeline to do. At the time, even when Nathan, you visited Sierra Leone, even in that meeting, I was not on the list at all to even attend the meeting.
So let me just give a bit of context. So the work that was started by Richard Cole, the founder, rescuing child soldiers in the kind of early to mid 1990s during the heat of the Civil War. Prince was one of those that was brought into the home. He was actually rescued by Richard Cole. He was pickpocketing to survive. After he realized he couldn't stay in his village, he moved to Freetown, the capital, and was living on the streets trying to just pickpocket, survive like that. One day he was caught red-handed, and they started saying, this is a rebel, this is a rebel. Now, if you can imagine, in a civilization where all law and order had fallen apart and people had witnessed or heard about the atrocities that had been going on, people took it into their own hands to eliminate threats. So here's a mob calling for Prince to be beaten to death right there. A man called Richard Cole wades into this mob and pulls Prince into a waiting car and rescues him, takes him away, brings him into his own home, talks to him, shows him love and care for a couple of weeks, and then brings him into what was known then as the Nehemiah home, a rehabilitation center to see boys that were traumatized by war reestablished, and really through the power of the gospel. Sadly, in 2006, Richard passed away. And so there was this kind of a gap then of who is going to carry what Richard Cole had once stood for, because all that we could see was all the leaders that were left, that were around Richard, were fighting each other. Who got to have control? Who got to access all of the resources within Lifeline Nehemiah? And so we from the UK thought, it's all over. Everything that Richard Cole had built is all over. But in 2009, Nathan said, I think we should go and see if there's any of those young guys that Richard rescued that have the passion and the vision. So in 2009, we arrived there. We were given a list by the leaders of who should come to this mini conference that we're putting on. Prince was not one of the names put forward, but PJ used his intelligence and his ideas to say, this guy Prince needs to be there. And so Prince was one of the guys that were there. And we discovered, wow, the very heart that we saw in Richard is still beating in some of these guys. So there was four guys that we said, this is where the future is. It's not in the older guys that are all fighting each other. At that stage, the funding was drying up or being siphoned off. Everything was in pretty much disrepair. And there was no father figure like Richard. Just describe what a normal day was, because you still had some funding to go to university.
Yeah. We used to get support from the UK for education, university fees. During that period, as I mentioned a few minutes ago, I never knew that I became already a threat to some people who were in leadership at the time. I was just doing my own thing because I believe in the vision that God has called us. We should do our own. We should make ourselves available to be used by God. So at one time I asked for my university fee. I was almost driven from university. They said they've sent my money actually, but the money went to Ghana and fell into an account in Ghana. That was a starting point of another tussle. We had back and forth to a point I almost dropped out of university, my course. But I met with the dean and had this conversation for the first semester just to take my exams. Fast forward, well, after the conference with the other guys together, we met and said, of course, they said we should close the school, and we were like, no, that's not what actually, we don't believe that's what God is saying. When I said, they said, the leaders by then, they called a meeting, they said, should close the school, the home should be closed, and we said, no, that's not really God, what God has called us for. By then, there's no money. There's nothing like what you could use at the moment to say, oh, yes, we can continue with this. But we thought deeply that God can use us to really transform the current situation. So after the workshop, the conference, we had a meeting at Hotel 510 with you and Nathan, William, P.S., Leonard. We had this meeting and we said we want to continue. Just after that, by 2010, it became apparent that already I was on the list, a kind of blacklist of the leaders. And they called us to a meeting and said, Prince, now you either join us, that's the Edward Cole's team, you either join us or you fight against us. So I like, No, I'm not really fighting against anybody here. We're just doing what God has given, because in the morning we have to think how we survive, get to the market and get something to eat, get to university, walk up to 25 miles off, back and forth. You come again, you have boys who will have to go to school, they have issues, you have to sort out those issues. So there are critical things, more important things to give attention to than even fighting against one another.
So the political climate just in around the Nehemiah was, there was a tussle over which guy that was there leading when Richard Cole was there got to, it really influenced the work. Meanwhile, Prince and the guys are actually dispatching some of the Nehemiah guys to go to the marketplace when it's closing to try and beg for scraps. They bring back the scraps, they divide it. That's their food for the day. I mean, that was the level of poverty that they were living in. Prince had funding for university, but not for anything else. I think you did a computing degree without a computer,
yeah,
which is challenging. but you used to walk the distance because you didn't have transport.
Yeah.
And then you'd be getting home. Not only are you trying to catch up with your work, you've then got a line of 20 boys that have all been falling out with each other during the day and now need effectively the big brother to sort it all out. So I remember when we came in 2010, you just kept on falling asleep.
Yes, I mean, there was no kind of calendar you manage your time, because even around 12 a.m., 1 a.m., you'll have guys who will come just to tell you issues. So you have to give them audience, and that was how the life was just is at the moment.
So then in 2010, there's this tussle over where you put your allegiance between the two factions. And up until that point, they were happy just to ignore you. But now your profile was being raised, and you are now becoming more of a threat. So that was, first of all, trying to get you on the side, but then when you didn't play ball, what happened next?
So before even they started calling me to join the side, the church had already closed, because they fought there, the membership, I mean,
literally fought on stage.
Yes.
There was a fight between the two leaders over who held the microphone.
Yeah.
And that was
so they were fighting, one members were walking off. That continued. Since that time, the church actually, it was like a real attack against the work. So we said, okay, let's try to revive the church. So the Nehemiah boys, we started meeting, focus on just building the church. And we started inviting friends, and they were coming. They said, okay, to join them. We said, no. So the two factions were trying to get us on their side, and we were like, no, guys, let's be neutral. They succeeded to get some boys on other sides, the two factions, but some of us stayed neutral. From that moment, they started calling me to a meeting to negotiate. Okay, now you, because we asked for some money to be doing businesses like show, premiership, Champions League, we'll buy fuel, Super Sport. The first time we decided to go and buy the dishes, we were called by the cold team and said, oh, we too, we have money. That's the same business we wanted to do. And we're like, okay, that's fine, but please allow us to continue with our own business as we've already designed. That was also a battle. So that continued to the point that they also hired some of brothers, former Nehemiah boys, who we've lived together, who've shared life together, to come and attack us on a Sunday morning. They were passing with machetes, hoes, nails on sticks. On Sunday morning, they asked them, community people, we were like, where are you guys going? Yeah, we are going to church. They came and attacked us that very morning. It was a fierce fight, to the point the police had to come to really dispatch us.
So when this armed mob is walking down through the village with machetes, with sticks, with nails put through them, and all kinds of weapons, they were asked, where are you guys going? They said, we're off to church. You get that? Yeah. So you had to literally fight for survival yes, that point?
At that point, it wasn't anything about negotiation, but it was about fight. We needed to fight to protect the younger ones, protect ourselves. They injured two of the boys. We took them to the hospital. They two ran off. We disarmed some of them. Those that brought knives and cutlasses, we disarmed some of them.
So you were under physical threat at that point, but you were also greatly betrayed by people that had for years been part of Richard's leadership team that was about building you guys up, supporting you, and meant to be loving you. And then at this point, you've experienced all this. Now, it's common to either have two responses. One is to run away, say, no, this ain't going to work, I'm going to keep away from this, or automatically to fight all of the time. But you felt to navigate as best as you can to remain neutral, to not return hatred. So you said even though they were regarding you as an enemy, you never regarded them as an enemy.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. And I think that's, for me, that was the most difficult aspect for all of us that we are really working together. Because even the team members, some we say, these are guys that we need not to even talk to. But at some point I would say, why should we not talk to them? I was not actually considered them to be enemy. The way I saw them at some point that yes, they made themselves available to be used by the enemy against us. Because this was something like, yeah, we're training boys to be leaders. These were things that they've been saying over the years. These were words that they've been praying for over the years. We've had them, sat together in the room. They've talked about this all of a sudden. What they've been talking about was just seeing them walking against the thing that they've been talking about. I was like, no, this is not just physical. This is something that they've made themselves available. So, I try to engage the guys, and sometimes even those that you try to show love, they break your heart. It's painful sometimes. And for us, it was difficult because when Richard was alive, sometimes you go and meet Richard, this is what I'm struggling with. But now there was nobody that you could run to even have this conversation with.
So did you get anxious or
definitely
fearful?
Yeah.
During... Just explain a little bit about that, the evolution for you. So as you became more confident in God, how did it affect your attitude and your behavior in all of these different conflicts?
So reflecting back, I think that's the point where really it became more clearer that God was really with me in the process. Because before this time, in Mende, we have this saying, Elongoma, I will not forgive. I will retaliate, those kind of things in the past. But I reached to a point where someone would do me something, will help me, but instead of reacting, I would choose to forgive. I remember 2010, 11, 12, when I came here, John talked to me about forgiveness, acceptance and forgiveness. So I went to Daniel, and Daniel gave me some books that related to those kind of subjects. I was reading, and I came across, oh, these were the very things that I've been doing. I never knew that these were the things that really God wants. And I took those books back home and started reading, sharing with the team. And that helped me really to like anchor more in God, because before I was just doing it. I had peace. People hurt me, but having a peace even in the process. But after reading those books, I realized, oh, I'm on the right track and God is in this. And the inner peace is something that I've relied on. When the Spirit of God is with you, you have inner peace. Sometimes even when everyone is laughing, when my spirit man troubles, I'll be worried. But even when people will be shouting around, things are happening, I have inner peace, God has helped me through. And the more get more relationship with God, stronger relationship with God, the better understand how God operates in this particular subject that we are talking about.
When I heard you speak, I kind of see the three stages of how you begin to really base your life on who God is. And so first you've got to realize the promises that God makes. The promises that he's with you, will never forsake you. Effectively that phrase that when he says yes, nobody can say no. So you know it in your head.
Yeah.
So you got a head grasp. Then there's a point to which the reality of that kind of comes down to your heart. You actually believe these promises, that it's not just contained in there, but there's a desire to live as if it's true. But then almost it's got to get to your hand where you can actually wield the truth like a sword, like a weapon, where you're able to keep hold of what he says even when everything on the ground seemed to contradict that and undermine that. And there was a couple of phrases that I remember that came to mind. So V.R. Edmund said, "Never doubt in the dark what God has taught you in the light." Would you say that there were temptations at points where everything seemed dark that you started just accepting that it was just dark?
Yes, humanly speaking, at some point I felt, if I started asking myself, why am I still here? I remember there were times when, of late, maybe around 2015 when we lost the baby, and also a lot of accusation around. Mary and I sat back and we were like, what are we really, why are we still here? Why are we still here with all these things? That was a question. It was only God who helped us to really navigate through, because humanly speaking, we were down. People we rely on, people that we were working with, they were just creating stories, accusing us. Even though when God was using us to really save lives, but internally, we were like tortured. I don't know if you understand that. We were like tortured by what people were saying against us. So God helped us through that. It wasn't easy. Mm-hmm. We were like, okay, why can't we just quit?
And that was probably the lowest I've ever known you to be. So you just come through the Ebola epidemic, you lost your own child at birth, and then there was disunity within the leadership team around you. This was guys that had been part of standing with you when all of the other issues had come up in 2010. You at one point considered quitting.
Yes, that's just what I was just trying to explain.
What?
That's...
Who was it that helped at that point?
I think let's come back to the phrase, when God says yes, no man can say no. Even for us at that point, we were like, okay, let's quit at this point. But God wanted us to be with him. And we engage in conversations. Even when we started that conversation did not materialize. We were thinking to quit, but that did not materialize.
I saw this clip, which I thought kind of describes or illustrates a little bit of what life can be like. So sometimes we can be on the ground level and it's completely overcast like this. We can be overwhelmed by the negativity that's around us and we can just start interpreting life from that. So easy in those times to forget that the sun is actually still shining. God is still who he always was and always is and always will be behind the clouds. Another little story that I felt coming to mind when Prince was talking is If you've ever read the Narnia series and Horse and His Boy, there's a character in the story called Shasta. That's the main character that you follow through. And he's an orphan. He was the only survivor of a shipwreck, and his boat just drifts to shore where this fisherman is sitting, and this fisherman raises him. It's not been an easy upbringing for him, and this at one point the adventure starts when this horse comes to him and decides that they're going to escape together. And so there's all these adventures, but there's a lot of trials and tribulations on this adventure. And by the time you get to the end of the book, Shasta's feeling pretty worse for wear. And he ends up talking to this figure that's kind of in the darkness, can't quite work out who it is. And he's just saying, he's explaining his life and what's gone on for him. And so he talks about never knowing his real mother and father and how he'd been brought up by a stern fisherman. He talks about his escape. And during their escape, they're chased by this, by a lion. There's a bit one night where he's having to wait by these tombs, and he's scared, and he feels, but this cat comes up to him and he feels comforted by this cat there. There's points where he's hearing all these beasts howling around him. And then right towards the end of the story, talking about being chased again by this lion. And he's talking to this figure and he says, "Don't you feel sorry for me, effectively, for the life that I've had? Haven't I had such bad luck?" And the voice says, "I don't consider you having bad luck." So, but to encounter so many lions. So, well, there was only one lion. It's like, how do you know that? "Because I am the lion." And it's like, it's like his blood runs cold. And the voice goes on to describe, says, "I was the lion that forced you when you were running away. By appearing, I forced you to meet up with someone else because your paths then crossed when I appeared. I came to you in the form of a cat when you were scared and needed to be comforted in the tombs. I was the lion that drove the jackals away from you. The howling that you could hear was my protection over you. So I was the lion that gave the horse new strength so it could reach to take the message that it needed to in time by chasing you." And he said, "I was also the lion that pushed the boat to land on the beach where that fisherman had been prepared to take you in as his own." And I've always found this story so amazing because Shasta had no idea, did not know that all of these events, there was actually a hand behind it of love and care and comfort. And always come back to that verse, when Jacob woke from his sleep, he thought, "Surely the Lord was in this place and I was not aware of it." How often are we unaware? How often do we want to talk about how unlucky our life has been or how grey the clouds are? Yet God wants to run his narrative over top of our action replays. He wants to show how he was there in those times that we didn't know it. Just like Prince could describe, even when he was in the jungle, when he looks back, he said, "The hand of God was on me. He was always close to me. He was always loving me. He was always saying yes, even though everybody else was saying no." So Prince, how do I get this confidence in God that you've described?
It's only God who gives that. I don't think there's any other way to explain it. For me, it's, I would say, the experience with God is what I'm trying to explain here today. So God has the destiny, our destiny, each and every one, our destiny is in the hands of God. How can we just align our very purpose with that of God? So choose to listen in God, choose to operate in God, choose to do that which the Father wants us to do, but start with relationship with him. I think that's very important.
So Martin Luther has this phrase, he said, "I know not where he leads me, but well do I know my guide." we don't necessarily get to know how the plot is going to twist, but we can know the author of our plot. And that's an invite for you today. So as a response, you might consider inviting him to reveal how close he was to you when you thought you were alone. You might want that Shasta experience. All my life, I thought that I was having to fight my own corner, thinking I was having to make my own story. But little did I know, just as he promised, he will always be with us even to the end of the age. Mm. So maybe that's the thing that you want to say, God, I want you to speak your narrative over my story now. I want you to change how I saw my life up until this point. You might want to do what Prince is saying, like, God, I want to know you better. My confidence in my future is not about knowing how it's going to end or how it's going to unfold. It's about knowing my guide. I want that. Perhaps you're facing a challenge right now, just like Neil was saying to us. And you've got a choice. Am I going to choose to believe the sun is still shining behind the clouds? Is he still Lord of all? Can I still declare, hallelujah, God above it all, even in this situation? And when we take that position, I think something true will land for us. Prince, have you got any closing remarks?
Well, it's just an encouragement. God loves everyone, all of us in this room. He cares. It's about believing in that very truth and rely on God in whatever situation we are in at the moment. Don't allow the lies to take over you, but let's anchor ourselves in that truth. The fact that God loves us, he will not allow those things around us pulling us down to swallow us. He will take us through. Thank you.
Thank you for listening to this podcast by Lifeline Church. We hope this message has been an encouragement to you. We are a relational church who live to demonstrate God's love to one another and our surrounding community in real and practical ways. We believe that this love can restore our families, our friendships, our communities, and our nation. We'd love to connect further with you, so please visit our website, lifelinechurch.co.uk, or interact with us on Facebook at lifeline.church.uk.